Hello, Falcoholics. What is up? Welcome to another episode of the Dirty Birds of Brews podcast. I'm your host, Kevin. I have Falcoholic Kevin here to bring you our Falcons 2024 NFL Draft Recap Show as we wrap up day three. Just finished watching the Falcons press conference. Thankfully, the Falcons not making any seventh round picks this year, so we can get the show out to you guys earlier and also be done with this draft a little bit earlier than last year where we were still very much on the clock at this point that I'm recording this show. So thanks to the Falcons for getting rid of those seventh round picks. Definitely appreciate that. But guys, I'm Kevin. I have Falcoholic Kevin. Thanks for joining us here today on the Dirty Birds of Brews podcast. An eventful draft for Atlanta, starting with a lot of controversy at the top with the pick of Michael Penix before Atlanta ended up having, I think, a pretty strong overall draft. You know, the Penix pick is going to be extremely controversial. No way to slice that. We will touch on that again if you want my more advanced thoughts on that, because I'm going to focus more on the other picks in this and sort of the overall thoughts. That you can watch our round one recap from just a couple days ago that came out Thursday night. So you can check that out if you want more information there. Also broke down day two in more detail yesterday, this morning, whatever. So this show is going to focus more on the draft as a whole and also kind of look at these day three picks and how they fit and just sort of look at how this class, you know, the Falcons can get some contributors in this class and that sort of stuff. So it's an interesting class, very defense heavy, obviously. You know, I think it's ultimately what, five defensive players to just three offensive players, and two of those offensive players came in the sixth round. So very, very defense heavy, which is not surprising. I thought maybe we would get, you know, a quarterback and a wide receiver, you know, maybe an offensive lineman snuck in there. But that was pretty much all I thought we'd see from the offensive side of the ball, with most of the players being defensive guys. So not shocking in that way. I know the emphasis on the defensive line was kind of surprising, and the Falcons added three interior defensive linemen and an edge rusher. So that's four total defensive linemen in this class. Pretty wild to see that many added at once. This is going to be a pretty significant battle in camp with these guys. I mean, I there's a very good chance that one of these draft picks doesn't make the roster. You know, probably not Trice, obviously, at edge, but these interior guys, I mean, one or two of these draft picks might not make the roster. That's just kind of how this goes with that many guys being added. So very aggressive approach to the defensive line. Excited to break down these guys a little bit more with you. Before we get started on this class, let me bring you a real quick word from our sponsors, betonline.ag. Folks, BetOnline is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from the MLB, golf, NBA, and the NHL playoffs. You can get all the latest stats, news, and scores as you follow your favorite teams on their path to the playoffs, or if they're already in the playoffs on their path to the championships. I know we got a lot of Braves fans that watch our show. You guys probably have a lot to be happy about. It seems like the Braves are going to be good once again. You can bet on the Braves. Hawks season's over, unfortunately, so not much to do there, as well as the draft props done. But, you know, maybe you're feeling really high on the Falcons after this draft class. Maybe you're thinking that, oh yeah, this Atlanta team, I want to bet the futures on that. You can do that at betonline.com, where you can also get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. So what are you waiting for, folks? Head to that website today, betonline.ag. Or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Bet online, where the game starts. All right, so the Falcons end up making a total of eight selections in this draft. And, you know, we'll start at the top. You know, Michael Penix, extremely controversial. There's no way around it. It's a super aggressive gamble on the part of this coaching staff, where they're trying to thread the needle between winning right now with Kirk Cousins and winning in 2026 and beyond with Michael Penix. You know, Penix, I think, is not necessarily the guy anyone would have chosen to go that route with, because he is an older prospect. He has some serious deficiencies that make him a pretty risky prospect. But at the same time, I will be happy to acknowledge that Penix probably has the best chance of any of these quarterbacks outside of the top maybe two or three guys that could become a top 10 NFL quarterback in time, because of his... He throws a beautiful pass. There's no doubt about that. He has a very good arm. He's got some dual threat ability that's underrated. Obviously, he has the injury history and he's a little bit older. But in total, he is the type of prospect that could be an NFL franchise quarterback. So the Falcons are betting a lot on Penix becoming that franchise quarterback. seriously hope they're right, because this regime is betting it all on that happening, because they did not find a contributor at 8. They did not get anyone that's going to help this football team for the next 2 years at the very least, maybe even longer. That's an incredible gamble, incredibly ballsy, and I personally think it was a terrible idea, but you know, they are betting it all on that, and I you have to respect the conviction they have in Michael Penix and their vision for this football team. They knew the NFL media would absolutely hate this pick. They knew the fans would absolutely hate this pick, and they did it anyway, because who cares what everybody else thinks? If you think you're right, you should go do it, and I seriously hope they are right, because otherwise this is going to be looked back as a catastrophic decision at the top of this draft class to start the Fontenot-Morris regime. And Raheem Morris is staking his career on this pick. There's no doubt about it. This is an incredibly bold move for a guy that, wrongfully so, in my opinion, was not given a fair shake to be a head coach again for many years because of how things went down in Tampa Bay. But if he blows it with this and you know, starts a franchise in this manner, it's going to be really difficult for him to get another opportunity. And I feel bad for him. And I hope that he does find success here, obviously, because I like the hire of Raheem. I like Raheem Morris. I like Terry Fontenot. I want this to work. So, you know, my opinion on it is clear. I think it was a mistake. I think that they are going to possibly regret this pick, and we'll be asking in a couple, you know, in a year or so, like, wow, if we had taken Roma Dunze, could we be in the Super Bowl conversation right now? But maybe I'm just being a hater, right? I know there's a lot of people that like this pick. I know there's a lot of folks that think that this is a worthy gamble. And if you're going to gamble on someone at 8 that's not going to play, it better be a quarterback, right? And that's exactly what they're doing. So I hope that they are right. Is the short version. I hope that they're right and that this pick is not a catastrophe, because I can't handle any more Falcons catastrophes. I really can't. It's too I'm ready to be happy. And thankfully, I think the rest of the draft was better. We'll get into day two here in just a moment. So getting into day two, to start things off, the second round pick, I like the player a lot. Rook Arororo, the defensive tackle from Clemson, is the guy the Falcons end up going with. I dislike trading up from 43 to 35, and I said this on the day two show. We don't know what the intel was. I assume the intel was that he was going to go before 43, because I don't know why you trade up otherwise. But burning a day two pick to move up for Rook Arororo, I don't agree with that. I don't think that was a good idea. I think that was very, very much an overpayment for the type of project that Arororo is. And I like Arororo. I would have been very happy with him at 43. I think when you just set a day two pick on fire to go get him, a day two pick that could have been a starter and a contributor for this football team, I just have a hard time thinking that that's going to be a worthwhile trade. But the good thing about Arororo, he is an elite athlete. He is, I believe the quote was that RAS has him as like the 15th most athletic defensive tackle of all time, out of thousands of testers. He has tremendous length. He has tremendous athletic ability. And to Arororo's credit, he is a day one run defender. I think he defends the run well. I think he defends the run with a ton of energy and effort, and uses his length well against the run. But he is a complete raw ball of clay as a pass rusher. And obviously, if you're trading up to take a defensive lineman in the top 40, you are expecting him to be a key rotational pass rusher for you at the very least. So, you know, Arororo could start as a 3-4 defensive end, maybe play some 4-I. If he bulks up a little bit more, could potentially play 3-tech at some point. But he's got a ways to go to be a pass rusher. He does at least use his hands. He doesn't use them particularly well. It doesn't really know what he's doing with them, but he does use them. And it's typically easier to teach guys how to use their hands correctly if they're already using their hands. So, I do like Arororo, the player, a lot. So I'm not as mad about this one as I think a lot of people are, because I was on board with him at 43 for sure. And I did mock him to the Falcons at one point, so at least I get to check that box, right? But I think the trade up and setting that 79 pick on fire, don't love that. Don't think that type of move is really ever a good idea. I think they would have been better served by just waiting to see who was there at 43. There would have been secondary players available. There would have been other stuff available. Or just waiting a little bit and trading up and only giving up a fourth rounder instead. I mean, I don't like it. I don't like the trade up. I don't think I'm ever going to agree with the trade up. But if he becomes a Pro Bowler or whatever, then of course it'll be worth it. And we'll see. But I do like Arororo, the player. And I'm excited to see how they incorporate him into this defense. But again, this is yet another example that this is a future-focused draft, not a win-now draft, which is big difference from what a lot of people thought we were going to get in this draft class. Moving on to pick 74. This is more of a immediate impact player, one that I think this is probably the favorite for a lot of people. Maybe the fourth-round pick could be the favorite. We'll see. But and that's edge rusher Braylon Trice from Washington. Big fan of Trice. One of the most productive pass rushers in college football. I think he has by far the most pressures of any player in college football over the past several seasons, even more than Laiatu Latu, who was not a very close second, honestly. Trice is a just pressure player. He creates a ton of pressure. He always seems to find a way to the quarterback. Finishing, not a great sack finisher. He is very much like a secondary rusher that's going to put pressure on the quarterback, but not necessarily be able to finish, because I think his ability to change directions is probably his weakest trait. I think he's explosive. He's super strong, very good bull rusher, good run defender. I think he's someone that's going to be able to play quickly and contribute as a run defender and contribute as a pass rusher. But he needs someone to finish the sack. And I think that that's what the Falcons are hoping to do by investing in all these interior players and with the interior guys that they already have. Right. But they need to, you know, they need to get that. And I think Trice is a good player. I think good value here too. He was at the top of my list for round three targets. So I'm very happy with his selection. I think he's someone that will be an immediate contributor. Whether he starts or not, I don't really care. I think he's going to play a role immediately. He's the one I'm most confident in carving out a role in week one of this season. I think he will be an impact player for this team. At some point, you know, will he ever be a double-digit sack type of edge rusher? I don't think so. But he could be one of those like 5 to 8 sack guys that's just a contributor. And if he creates a lot of pressure, that's half the battle. You got to get pressure to get sacks. And I think that he is one player that can absolutely do that for you. So moving on to day three. So on day three, the Falcons end up making 5 picks because they did pick up a 6th rounder as a part of that trade up, which is nice, you know, to get an extra pick in here. And of these picks, it's 3 defensive players, 2 offensive players, but the 2 offensive players come at the very end of the class. So at 109, this is arguably the best value pick on the board for the Falcons, and that's getting defensive lineman Brandon Dorlus from Oregon, who in a lot of boards was in the 60s, 50s, you know, what have you. So this is a terrific value relative to consensus media draft boards. And Dorlus is a very interesting player. Honestly, similar to Orororo in a lot of ways. Dorlus isn't quite the physical specimen that Orororo is, but good player, productive player, more polished pass rusher than Orororo. Not quite as good against the run, and smaller. Again, not quite the physical specimen, but I think Dorlus is probably a more polished pass rusher, someone who creates a lot of pressure. Again, one of the most productive pressure players in college football. And again, this is a clear emphasis. Falcons drafted a lot of guys that create pressure, even though the sacks aren't necessarily there, which, you know, we'll see how that translates. But typically guys that create a lot of pressure tend to be successful pass rushers that eventually do convert those into sacks. You know, Dorlus, like Orororo, you know, he moved all over, so he's a little bit raw. You know, in some areas, he needs to get a little bit more technical, needs to get a little stronger. I think Dorlus in particular, he's playing, you know, he went to the combine in like the 280s. He's going to have to get that weight up into the 300-ish range. So that'll take a little bit of time. But I do think, again, you look at these 3 picks, Dorlus, Trice, Orororo, all 3 super high effort, super high energy, physical players on the defensive line. They all kind of fit together. They all kind of fit the same archetype. And I think all 3 of these guys are going to find roles on this team sooner than later. You know, Dorlus probably going to be able to contribute earlier than Orororo as a pass rusher. Orororo more the early run defender, but I think over time, you know, you could see a scenario where these 2 guys are forming the core, like at least 2 out of, you know, 3 pieces on the interior of this Falcons defensive line. I think that's what the hope is, with Trice potentially being one of your edge starters in time. That's the best case scenario there. So we'll see if that pans out. I do like Dorlus. I think it's a good value. I think he's someone that will be able to contribute immediately. But all of a sudden, this defensive line room is getting very crowded, and we'll talk about that a little bit later in the show here. But moving on to the 5th round, 143, I think a lot of people expected a secondary player or a pass catcher. And it's neither. It is a linebacker. That's J.D. Bertrand from Notre Dame. And I like Bertrand. I was kind of surprised the Falcons went linebacker this early. But again, you know, Bertrand is the linebackers in this draft actually went way earlier than most people thought. I think the general consensus was that this was a pretty weak linebacker draft. And they just started flying off the board in the third round and fourth round. So I think the Falcons felt like if they wanted Bertrand, they were going to need to take him quickly. You know, team captain, very, very smart, very, very instinctual linebacker. And those guys typically translate. Even if it's just as a depth player, those guys typically have long NFL careers and play special teams. And I think Bertrand is a guy that was not able to test due to injury, but said that he had been working really hard and he was going to surprise people with his testing. I think a lot of people thought he wasn't as good of an athlete. He was claiming he was going to run in the 4.5s, which would be an elite time for a linebacker. So the Falcons love him. He's a local guy. You know, I think he makes a lot of sense. The Falcons don't really have much. They have three linebackers, which is a good start, obviously, at linebacker. Those are your three guys that are going to play the most, but Bertrand, they don't really have a fourth linebacker that you like. You know, were they going to sign a veteran? Were they going to bring somebody back? Instead, they go with Bertrand here, who's probably going to fill out that room nicely, be very inexpensive for you, and be a guy that can contribute on special teams right away and be a reliable, dependable linebacker who, if his testing is as good as he claims, he might have starting upside. I mean, he's a little bit on the small side, but again, you know, the NFL's going to these smaller 6'1", 235-ish linebackers. It's just not, that's just what's happening here, so not overly concerned about that. But yeah, he's an interesting guy. Little bit surprised by the linebacker pick here, but a good player, I think, worthy of this area of the draft. And someone that I think has a clear role, a clear spot on the roster, and a clear path to playing time on special teams and as a depth rotational linebacker. Then we get to kind of the surprising pick here, which is 186. The Falcons actually go with a running back in Jace McClellan from Alabama. Not a guy that, you know, I did a ton of work on. I didn't really do work on the running backs much at all, but I know Jace McClellan has a lot of fans, efficient runner at Alabama over the last couple years. Doesn't really have much pass catching production, but he is a decent pass catcher. I think McClellan is a guy that has more upside than his draft slot would. He has more upside than his draft slot would sort of suggest, right? I think McClellan is a guy that can outplay his stock here. I think this is a guy that is legitimately interesting as a third running back because I think he can do everything, right? He's a good athlete. You know, overall, he isn't a great one, but a good, like, checks the box there. He was able to produce. He's got a lot of experience as a pass protector. He can catch the ball. But really, I think what I look for in these late round running backs is, does he have vision? Does he have instincts? How does he carry the football? Can he play? And yes, the answer is yes. I think he does have good vision. I think he has good contact balance. I think he excels in a variety of rushing schemes, which the Falcons have not really emphasized before, but I think they will, because I think that's what the Rams have done typically. They're going to run more gap stuff. They're going to run more inside zone as opposed to this outside zone heavy approach that Arthur Smith employed. He can handle it. He's good at all of it. He's good at gap. He's good at inside zone. I think he's a good running back. I think he will make the roster. I think he will be this team's third running back, which they didn't really have. So, like, I know people were shocked by this pick. I think Avery Williams is like a change of pace back returner only. I don't really think he's a guy you're having carry the ball a bunch of times. So I think that adding a running back that the team likes, that they can trust to handle the load if they have a running back injury, which again, that does happen a lot. I like McClellan. I think he's a solid guy. I think this is certainly a worthy sixth round pick. Again, please don't get upset about sixth round picks. It's really just not worth it. It's not worth it to get upset about sixth round picks. But I think, you know, it's an interesting one. I think it surprised a lot of people. But again, he's a guy that has experience, that is a good pass protector, which is really what keeps a lot of guys from playing early in their career. And good runner that's got the vision and the know-how. And I think that is what... I think that's a pathway to playing time early, is if you can do that. So good on Jace McClellan here. And then we've got at the very next pick, right? Pick 187. I was hoping to get, you know, Malik Washington here. He ended up going just a few picks before this. Instead, we get another Washington. We get Casey Washington from Illinois coming in here. in Atlanta. And this is not a player that I watched at all. But I know he was a big winner from the Senior Bowl, a guy that did impress quite a bit. Did impress quite a bit at the Shrine Bowl and tested really well at his pro day. He was not invited to the combine. I think people were surprised by that. He is that big receiver that the Falcons kind of lack right now. I think that Atlanta, you know, could certainly use a guy like Casey Williams. He's got the size. I think he's an interesting pick. And, you know, I'm interested to see how the Falcons try to deploy him. I think he's probably a good gunner, right? I think he's someone that could play special teams. I wonder, you know, is he going to really have much of a role? Can he make this team? You know, that is the big question, right? Is this a guy that is going to be able to make a team, you know, immediately? Is he going to be able to contribute right away? He's an outside receiver. He's got good size. You know, he's physical. Again, maybe a good Drake London backup, right? And at this point in the draft, maybe that's all you can ask. The Falcons didn't really have a lot of size in this receiving core. But again, they didn't really emphasize adding anything to this receiving core. And I think this receiving core is one injury away from being a problem. So I don't really think this addresses that in a significant way. So we'll see if the Falcons gamble on the health of this group pays off or not. But the fact that they didn't really add anyone of starting caliber, again, this is like so many years now, you know, since the Drake London draft, the Falcons just have ignored wide receiver in the draft entirely. I don't like it. I think that is a risk. And nothing against Casey Washington. I think, you know, at this point in the draft, I think he's very intriguing, but this was a deep receiver draft and they waited until the sixth round to take one. And it's like, this is why you don't trade away pick 79. You could have got somebody there and Casey Washington and really built out this depth chart for the future. And you didn't do that. So I think this is another consequence of that trade up and, you know, it is what it is. But final pick of this class, pick 197. And they filled the dog quota, ladies and gentlemen. They got it done by drafting Georgia defensive tackle Zion Logue, who is really just a size, speed type of guy, right? I mean, he checks all the size boxes. I think he's like 6'6". You know, a guy that is a big-time developmental prospect. But he was, you know, again, I know a lot of people said, oh, he was stuck behind a really deep defensive line. He didn't get a lot of opportunities. He's big. He's, you know, fairly athletic. This is like probably the Falcons' developmental nose tackle. I think he's got good. He plays with, I know Lance Zierlein was saying that, you know, he's plays with some good pad level, has the size and strength to be a two gap, you know, nose tackle. He's got good length. He's got a couple of moves, you know, but he just doesn't have the production and, like, you know, he isn't very experienced and doesn't really have the technique that you would expect from a Georgia defensive lineman. So the Falcons are just kind of betting on him maybe being their developmental nose tackle here. He's got the length that they like. He's a big nose tackle. This is kind of your Eddie Goldman insurance. You know, if Eddie Goldman can't play, which again, I think it's very dangerous to bet on Eddie Goldman doing anything for this team. But if he's not ready, Zion Logue is here to be your nose tackle. And, you know, I think he's definitely someone that's worth taking a shot on at this point in the draft. I do like him. I think he's interesting. So yeah, Zion Logue, you know, it's not, I wouldn't be upset, you know, over this pick. I think he's interesting. He's a high type of ceiling guy that could potentially be, you know, an eventual nose tackle starter. And if you could get that at the end of a draft, that's never a bad pick. You know, I would have gone for someone like a Fabian Lovett. You know, I don't really know what Logue does better than Lovett. I mean, Logue has more upside. That's the answer, right? You know, Fabian Lovett doesn't really have much pass rush upside at all. Logue might have some. Logue has better size, you know, but you know, he is a Georgia Bulldog, so we have that going for him, right? We filled that dog quota. That's very important, I'm sure, to this whole team. But yeah, this draft class as a whole, again, it's obvious now. If it wasn't obvious before, the Falcons are not trying to win right now. They are trying to win right now in terms of, like, of course they want to win games this year, but they're not really emphasizing it. This draft class is very future-focused. The only pick that I think is an immediate contributor is Braylon Trice, and that's nice. We did need an edge rusher, right? And I like Braylon Trice, but like, none of these other picks are really going to help the Falcons in a meaningful way, like move the needle. They're great depth pieces. They're guys that I think are going to grow into starters, especially like Arororo and Dorless. I think those are two guys that could be future, serious future pieces. And I think that ultimately we're going to be happy with this class in the future. But it's, you know, one of those things where I think this is just something that's going to be jarring for a lot of fans that had a different sort of thought process for how the Falcons viewed this season when they signed Kirk Cousins. And I don't blame fans for having that thought process. Like, honestly, when you sign a quarterback to a huge deal, you expect that you're going to be going into a win now mindset, that because that's what logic would dictate, right? That is how teams typically do things. The Falcons instead signed Kirk Cousins to be the NFL's most expensive bridge quarterback of all time. And you know, I think this is more or less with this draft class, it's more or less a tacit acknowledgement that this is Kirk Cousins is here to win games for the next 2 years. And then we're going to try to go to Penix as soon as we can. And this team is the Super Bowl window starts in 2026. And I think the Falcons probably sold Cousins and other people on that the Super Bowl window starts now. And I'm sure they would like it to start now. But I think at the end of the day, the Falcons looked at this roster, looked at the salary cap situation, looked at what was going on. They're like, okay, we can win the NFC South. Can we win the Super Bowl? Can we beat the Chiefs with what we've got right now? I think the answer they came to was no. And I think they're probably right about that answer, for being honest with ourselves. Like, do the Falcons really have a chance to beat the Chiefs right now in the Super Bowl? Probably not. Do they have a chance to beat the Chiefs next year in the Super Bowl? I don't know. Maybe. But, you know, it's risky. And so betting it all to have two shots at a Super Bowl with Kirk Cousins, maybe not the best idea long term, right? So they go for this draft, which is very controversial. It's going to piss a lot of people off. And we've already talked about it. And again, the Falcons have to win over the next 2 years to even see this draft class come to fruition, which, look, I think a lot of people are viewing this through the lens of like, wow, you know, I can't believe these guys are messing around with a future-focused draft. But you got to remember, this is a new regime. Terry Fontenot has been here a while, but he clearly has no concerns about his job security if he's making these types of picks. So instead, the Falcons are like, we're gonna lay the groundwork now. This is a lay the groundwork class. And the Falcons are entering into a small rebuild that I think fans weren't expecting. And that's part of why the picks are so jarring. That's part of why the reaction to the picks is so negative, is because everyone thought the Falcons were trying to win now with Kirk Cousins. Even Kirk Cousins probably thought that, and that's not the case. Now, I say that, and you know, maybe the team will get mad at me because they think I'm insinuating they're not trying to win. Of course they're trying to win. They're trying to win right now. They're going to try to get as much out of this roster as they can, but they are not maximizing their winning window in 2024 and 2025. They're just simply not. They are instead, they're punting more or less with a top 10 pick. If you punt a top 10 pick, you're not serious about like really contending for a Super Bowl this year, because there's no, you know, unless Kirk Cousins gets hurt, in which case it's a disaster. You're probably not even going to see Michael Penix for the next 2 years. So, you know, you can't with a straight face tell me, oh yeah, we're trying to win now, we're going all in, and then punt your top 10 pick for 2 years. It's just like, yeah, that's not something that makes any sense, whatever. And that's what people are upset about. And I understand. And then they add to that, you know, two developmental interior defensive linemen that are probably not going to play much other than rotating in behind Grady Jarrett and David Onyemata. And you know, that's just the truth. I think it's pretty obvious. The Falcons didn't really make any effort to maximize their cap this year. They were trying to, they've kept the cap healthy in the future, and I think they're unlikely to dip into it significantly more. And I think, again, you're probably going to have people, players, you know, fans upset that this team is actually not really going as hard as they could be to win right now. But the honest truth is that this is not their winning window. Their winning window probably starts next year into 2026. That doesn't mean they're not going to be trying to compete right now. I think they believe they can win the NFC South with this roster. I think they just came to the realization that there's no way they could get this. They don't believe there's any way they could get this roster competing for a Super Bowl with Kirk Cousins here. They had too far to go, right? Winning the NFC and winning the Super Bowl, as we've seen, very different. And like, even if you win the NFC South, are you beating these other NFC teams? Are you really that good? And I think they had a very probably candid conversation, you know, in the front office about we're really not, and we need to get there before we go all in. And honestly, it's sort of the conviction and the soul searching that they had to do to come to these decisions. It is something that we should probably like applaud them for, because most coaching staffs and front offices wouldn't have the balls to do this, wouldn't have the conviction and the and the honesty to look in the mirror and say, like, you know what, we're just not good enough to do this. And like, we can destroy the cap like the Saints have been doing for the last like 5 years to try to push our window, you know, and try to actually compete, while in reality, we're not going to be able to get over the hump unless we get extremely lucky. And if you get extremely lucky, you know, you don't need to do that. Maybe you just like go, you just go hope for the best. But I think, you know, we'll see in time. We're not going to be able to really have a strong opinion on this draft class that isn't negative until we see Michael Penix play, which, like, there's a decent chance that Fontenot and Morris, if things go badly, don't even see Michael Penix play a snap in Atlanta. So, you know, you guys know all the reasons why I think the pick is extremely ballsy and probably a bad decision. The rest of the draft confirms, I think, in my mind, that this team is building for 2026, not 2024. And again, it's jarring. It's not what we expected, but I think that's the honest truth. And, you know, you're welcome to have your own opinion about their decision to do that. And I think that there's going to be a lot of varied opinions. And I think we're going to see a lot of fans coming around on this idea, because, again, well, the alternative is to just be angry for years. And no one really wants to do that. So this is my piece on it. Like, I think that it's a very bold decision that I think has a very high chance of failing, but I kind of applaud the team for having the courage and the maybe the self-scouting honesty to be like, you know, despite Kirk Cousins coming in, we really can't win the Super Bowl right now. If we want to win the Super Bowl, we have to push the envelope even further, and we have to do some things that no one else really, you know, is willing to do. We have to really take some risks and try our best to get this settled and to make this team into something even better for the future, so we can build a sustained winner. Because I will agree, the best way to win a Super Bowl is to be a sustained winner. You know, you need multiple shots. You can't just have a one-year window where you're competing for the Super Bowl. It's too risky. There's too many things that can go wrong, as we saw with the Jets, with Aaron Rodgers, right? First game of the season, bam, done. Window closed. And will they ever get back? I don't know. You know, now they're really screwed. But, you know, you need the best way to win a Super Bowl is to have multiple playoff runs, to make the playoffs consistently. And the Falcons, even under Dan Quinn, when they had that shot at the Super Bowl, they were not a consistent playoff team. They didn't make it in 2015. They made it in 2016. 2017, they got back. It looked like it was going to be okay. And then they botched it after that point. So, you know, even when you're doing the right things, it's hard to keep it going. So we'll have to see. You know, again, there's so many reasons this is risky, because look, if you're playing really well over the next 2 years, is Zach Robinson even going to be here to see Michael Penix play? I don't know, right? Like, who's going to be your next coach? You know, Raheem is more of that defensive guy. There's a lot of problems with this strategy. There's a lot of risks. There's a lot of pitfalls. But again, if Michael Penix becomes a franchise quarterback and some of these defensive line picks, you know, pan out, then no one's going to care that it took a couple of years for this to happen, because hindsight's 2020 and people are, you know, wanting to win. So if they win this year, I think fans will be happy. If this team wins the NFC South, then everyone's going to be fine with it. You know, and we'll probably be talking about how we could have gone further with Rome Odunze and that sort of thing. But if they win the NFC South, ultimately we're going to be okay with that. If they're competing next year as well, you know, we're going to be okay with that. We're not going to be able to know the truth about this class, the honest truth, for a long time. And that's a pain. We don't get to celebrate a first round pick like every other team in this draft. We don't really get to see returns from this draft class for a while. And like, people said that about the Rams draft last year, that was way they drafted all these guys that weren't going to play. And then they did, and they had a lot of early contributors. So we could be way off. Like, not necessarily way off in sort of the mindset behind the draft, but I think way off in that there's a chance that these guys hit and start playing well immediately. But there's a lot of things that have to go right for this to work. I think it's very risky. But again, you know, the one thing I'll say, even though I disagree, is that this, I do kind of applaud the team for at least having the honesty with themselves to be like, yeah, you know, we're not realistically going to be able to compete, even though they signed Kirk Cousins to win and help the fans get back in, so that when they actually do start to hopefully get into the winning window that fans are in and all this stuff. So I hope that they thread the needle. I hope that we win now and win later. And eventually this is the path that leads us to a Super Bowl, because I like Raheem. I like Terry, you know, I even like Penix. I wasn't a big fan of it at 8. I'm still not, but again, ballsy draft. We'll see how it turns out. I get, it's not going to be boring, so don't have to worry about that going forward. But guys, thank you so much for hanging out with Dirty Birds and Brews and the Falcoholic Life as we covered this 2024 draft. We will have more shows for you coming next week as we sit down with some draft analysts to get their thoughts on a very, very controversial draft class for the Falcons, especially at the top. And we'll have Thorne Eistrom on at some point in the next week or two to discuss the Falcons UDFA haul, which I'm sure will be pretty sizable. And we'll see if any other free agent signings come after the draft. We know that's a popular time to see these guys added. So thank you guys so much for hanging out. Thank you for letting me share my thoughts. It's helped me feel a little bit better. I hope it's helped you guys feel a little bit better too. And we'll get on into the summer and on into that training camp prep as we get closer to July. And I'm excited to be able to bring you guys more training camp coverage, more in-season coverage, OTAs, all that stuff as we get down there. But guys, thank you so much for tuning in. I'm Kevin at Falcoholic. Kevin, please like, subscribe if you haven't done so already. Check out the channel memberships, check out the Patreon, check out the Falcoholic Discord as well. Check out the site for that written content. We'll be back next week with even more shows for you talking about this draft class. I'm sure there'll be no shortage of takes. You don't have to worry about that. Thank you guys so much for hanging out. We'll see you next time on the Dirty Birds and Brews podcast. Have a great day, folks.